Backasswards Podcast. We are the Backasswards Boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our beautiful Colorado studio is Arden.
And I use he, him pronouns.
Tonight, guys, gals, and envy pals, I am going to be chugging right along with our series on JFK with part four, Jack Ruby. And we are finally going to talk about Oswald's killer and finally get to start talking about, I don't know if we'll fully get to the entire thing, but we're going to start talking about our first conspiracy behind what happened on 11-22-63.
We are back to doing JFK. I don't know if you folks have been listening to the Wednesday Phenomena, but the Wednesday Phenomena is nothing like this. And so if you're coming back to JFK, very similar to how me and Kyle are coming back to JFK right now, I'm really excited. Like I've said the whole series, I forgot what it's like to talk about a conspiracy. I'm so excited for part four. I cannot fucking wait. It's so cool.
But really quickly, guys, speaking of the Wednesday Phenomena, for all of our $5 tier Nigerian candidates, we wanted to say thank you so much for signing up so that you can watch that bonus content every single week. And this week we wanted to thank our newest patron, Chris Shearer, who I believe, I don't know if they want us to say this, we can cut it out, but I believe is a friend of Arden's. So thank you, Chris. We appreciate you so much for signing up, and I hope you enjoy the Wednesday Phenomena.
Yeah, Chris is really cool, and thank you for signing up for our $5 tier. Folks, if you would like to be shout out in a main episode of the Backasswards Podcast, or if you want access to the Wednesday Phenomena, you could just join our $5 tier, become a Manchurian candidate, get your weekly activation word, and subscribe to our Patreon. You can do that at patreon.com/backasspod.
But guys, as always, before we get into it, our sources, and as always, the first stop on the research train is our good friend, Wikipedia.
Because we stan Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast.
If you find yourself in the financial situation to do so, they just sent me an email about asking for donations, so I'm sure they could use it. Go ahead and throw them. Literally, like, a dollar would be put you above 99% of people who use Wikipedia. Just once.
It's
it doesn't
true.
Have to be every month. Throw them one single dollar, and they would love it.
Exactly. And they would very much appreciate it, because it is a good plastic cup deed.
Ooh, it is, as in it's single use, and you can just throw it away. You can just do it once, and you don't even have to think about it again, you know?
Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly.
And then you
That's
have the
guilt
every single time you do think about it, you know? And,
right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of projection going on here. Oh, so I was trying to say philanthropic deed. I was trying to say
philanthropic. Shit. Philanthropic.
My bad.
I used their page on Jack Ruby. I also used an article from Sky History TV called Did the Mob Kill JFK? New evidence suggests that they did. I used an article from themobmuseum.com titled Jack Ruby and Telephone Calls to Mobsters, Evidence of a JFK Conspiracy. And I used an article from allthatsinteresting.com titled Jack Ruby, the man who killed Lee Harvey Oswald.
Oh, we love some good sources in this house.
But guys, we are not scholars despite loving a good source in this house. And so we are probably going to get some things wrong.
Like saying that the mob killed JFK. Okay. All right.
I mean, we're going to get to it.
Starting off. Oh, I'm coming at him hot, Kyle.
We got to build to it, aren't we? We're almost there, but we still have a little more building to do.
You're right. I'm sorry.
We are also not linguists. We are probably going to say some things wrong.
Like saying that the mob didn't kill JFK too early in the episode.
Now, hold on to your asses, because things are about to get backwards.
I think it's been a while, folks, since we saw part four in the title. And so I don't know if you're excited, but I'm really excited. It's JFK part four. We're talking about Jack Ruby. We're probably going to get to our first conspiracy. It's a loaded plate tonight, folks. So I'm excited. Yeah. Take us into it, Kyle.
According to the National Archives, Jack Ruby was born Jacob Leon Rubinstein in Chicago, Illinois. His exact birthday is subject to confusion, with early records ranging from March 13th to April 25th, all the way to June 23rd, and even farther ahead. But Ruby himself eventually settled on March 25th, 1911, as a birthday.
My man picked his own birthday. I love that.
There's no doubt that he was born in the year 1911, but since the recording of births wasn't required in Chicago before 1915, the official date will likely never be exactly known.
Wow.
Jacob Rubinstein had one older brother and three older sisters, the two oldest of whom were born in Poland before the family arrived in the United States. His father, Joseph Rubinstein, was born in Sokolov near Warsaw in Poland while Poland was still under the rule of Tsarist Russia. He eventually entered the Russian army, where he picked up alcoholism and his future wife, Fanny Turek-Rutowski. In 1898, Rubinstein walked away from his military career and made his way to America through England and Canada.
Man, you could really just pick up alcoholism and a future wife back in the day, couldn't you? At the same
time. It seems like a pretty common habit, yeah.
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to laugh, but just the way that that sentence kind of rolled off, that was really good.
Unfortunately, Jack Ruby's youth was plagued by frequent domestic violence between his parents. His father was often arrested and charged with assault and battery, alcoholism playing a significant role in that.
I'm not having fun anymore, dude. I was trying to lighten the mood, and now here we are. Wow.
But luckily, in 1921, the couple separated, with Ruby's mother claiming to have wanted for 15 years due to suffering from her husband's alcoholism and frequent infidelity as well. When Jack Ruby was 11, he was referred to the Institute for Juvenile Research due to his truancy and being incorrigible at home. According to the psychiatric report, he was quick-tempered and disobedient, and his mother's own temperament was cited as a potential cause for this behavior. Ruby would run away from home frequently, he got into fights, and he generally acted disagreeable towards any authority figures in his life. A psychologist that interviewed him at the time said, quote,
"He could give no other good reason for running away from school except that he went to amusement parks. He has some sex knowledge and is greatly interested in sex matters. He stated that the boys in the street tell him about these things. He also claims that he can lick everyone and anybody and anything he wants to do."
So he thought pretty highly of himself.
It also sounds like he's pretty feisty, dude. Sounds like he's got a little bit of that dog in him.
He does, for sure. Ruby's education didn't seem to advance past high school, as there are no records past his freshman year. With little education and trouble at home, Ruby began to scalp tickets and sell anything that he could to make a buck. He was particularly interested in sports paraphernalia.
Hey.
According to history.com, Ruby worked a number of odd jobs. Yeah, I mean, probably. According to history, Ruby worked a number of odd jobs throughout his youth and early adulthood, from door-to-door sales and street hustling, all the way to an aircraft mechanic in the Army Air Forces during World War II.
Whoa, hey, it just spanning from, you know, like selling, you know, sports jerseys on the street all the way to being an aircraft mechanic. That's the range. Yeah.
By the late 1940s, Ruby had moved to Dallas, Texas, where he established himself as a nightclub owner of the Burlesque Carousel Club and gambling aficionado by 1960.
It's the plot of the musical Guys and Dolls, my friends.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. This is all Guys and Dolls. This is all I envision.
He was arrested several times for minor offenses, but he had established local connections with the local mob and garnered an ill-advised reputation as a name dropper and attention seeker. He also made a number of friends in the local police department and the underworld. So he was kind of playing both sides of the coin a little bit, right?
Right. And just to speak to, I actually think this will help support the episode. It's not a joke, but like what we are learning right now, what you're telling us is that we know that Jack Ruby had connections to the mob at the time, and furthermore had connections with the police at the time, right? And that's something important to note here.
Had connections, as in he was friends with people. Like, there's not real evidence that he was, like, doing things for the mob or for the police, right? But, like,
okay,
he would hang out at cop bars, and he would also hang out at, like, mob locations, right? So he knew people in both spheres.
Right. Okay. And that's also important to distinguish. So I'm glad I asked. Yeah.
According to a 1978 report by New Times, Ruby had met on occasion with Miami gangster Handsome Johnny Roselli, who himself was later tied to a CIA-led conspiracy to assassinate Castro alongside gangsters Santo Trafficante Jr. and Sam Giancana. This was a real CIA and mob joint effort that happened that for sure we're going to talk about on the episode at some
point. Wow.
Not this episode, on the podcast at some point.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. Holy shit.
Ruby may possibly have also been part of a scheme to smuggle guns to Cuba before their revolution, and at some point allegedly worked with the FBI but provided them with absolutely useless information. Allegedly.
Allegedly, my friends, allegedly. Remember this word, allegedly.
Jack Ruby's mutual relationship with the Dallas Police Department frequently ended in leniency for his crimes.
Come on.
Skeptics of the Warren Commission often cite these connections as an explanation for why Ruby so easily was able to shoot Oswald.
But once again, and I'm sorry to stop you, but like once again, like, are you telling me that we know that Jack Ruby was caught doing crimes and got more lenient sentences during that time period?
Yeah, it was several assaults. I know there were like gambling charges that were levied at him at some point as well, and these were either dropped or reduced to like fines, things like that, right?
I mean, that does raise a question, and I feel like that's fair to say. Like, if he's getting these lenient sentences, I wonder what's going on there, at the very least, right?
Right. And we'll get to where these connections might have helped him a bit later.
All right.
The 2017 release of JFK files revealed that Ruby told an FBI informant to, quote, watch the fireworks, end quote, on the day that Kennedy was killed.
Huh?
According to The Independent, he made these comments hours before the president was murdered.
Ooh.
The FBI file stated, quote,
the informant stated that on the morning of the assassination, Ruby contacted him and asked if he would, quote, like to watch the fireworks. He was with Jack Ruby and standing at the corner of the Postal Annex building facing the Texas School Book Depository building at the time of the shooting.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. And I don't know if you folks remember this, all right? But the Texas School Book Depository, big deal. This is a big deal. So this guy is allegedly standing across from the Texas School Book Depository when the president gets shot. And a couple hours ago, Jack Ruby was like, hey, do you want to watch the fireworks? What are you talking about, dude? What is that? It's crazy to me. And I feel like this is important to say again. Like, it's crazy to me that this came out in 2017. Like, we're still learning more stuff about this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. There were documents released last year about this case.
Wow.
And there's still more. We still don't have everything.
I can only imagine, yeah.
So, according to the same informant, immediately after the shooting, Ruby left and headed towards the area of the Dallas Morning News building, without saying a word. This document strongly suggested that Ruby would likely have not killed Oswald because he was angry about Kennedy's assassination.
Interesting. Okay, right.
Right. So in the Dallas Police Department, reporters were normally required to identify themselves with a press pass, right? This is pretty standard procedure.
Okay.
But Dallas Police Department's Captain King said that it was impossible due to, quote,
the atmosphere that existed over there, the tremendous pressures that existed, the fact that the telephones were ringing constantly.
According to Assistant Chief of Police N.T. Fisher, quote,
anybody that could come up with a plausible reason for going to one of the third floor bureaus was able to get in. So essentially saying that Jack Ruby killing Lee Harvey Oswald in broad daylight, in front of other people, in front of police, and on TV, sparked so much interest that this police station is just getting flooded right now.
No,
with
this
reporters.
This is right after the
JFK.
Assassination. This is after JFK's killing. This is before Oswald has been killed.
I see. Which, I mean, I guess that would be another super understandable reason why they would be overwhelmed at the time, especially because it happened in their area.
Mm-hmm. And we actually know that Jack Ruby was present on the third floor where Oswald was held the night after Kennedy's death.
Okay, so that means that based off of what the assistant chief of police said, that anybody who goes to the third floor was able to get in and has a reason to be there, and it's like, it sounds like a secret club almost.
Well, more like anybody could have been there, and like the regular rules that were keeping people out weren't as strictly adhered to
because overwhelmed.
There were many fucking people, they couldn't. Right.
I see. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah. The decision to move Oswald to the county jail on Sunday morning was made by Chief Curry the previous night. When he determined that it would happen at 10 a.m., he, quote, told the newspaper people.
I will say, and again, it's so hard in a conspiracy episode because there's so much to say about everything, but like, it is really interesting that they moved him. You know what I mean? Like, why did they move him? Probably because that police station was getting so overwhelmed or something?
Yeah, to a higher security area, for sure.
I see.
He told the newspaper people, quote,
I believe if you are back here by 10 o'clock, you will be back in time to observe anything you care to observe.
That night, between 2:30 and 3 o'clock a.m., the local FBI and sheriff's offices both received calls from an anonymous man who warned them that a committee had decided to kill the man that killed the president.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What? And I know how the story ends. That's crazy. What the fuck?
It was Police Chief Curry who decided on the basement of the Dallas Police Headquarters as the best route to transport Oswald. At 9 o'clock a.m., police cleared the basement, leaving only police personnel inside. Guards were stationed at the top mm-hmm. of both of the on-ramps, and after that, the police then allowed reporters to enter the area. When Oswald got to the basement, 40 to 50 reporters and 70 to 75 police officers filled the room. Anywhere between 110 and 125 people. And Arden, as wow. you saw in the video, we just watched it, it's packed. They are packed tight in there.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people.
The masses erupted with energy when Captain J. Will Fritz and two detectives escorted Oswald out of the room. Somebody mm-hmm. shouted, "Here he comes!" And Detective B.H. Combest recalled, quote,
almost the whole line of people pushed forward when Oswald started to leave the jail office, the door, the hall. all the newsmen were poking their sound mics across to him and asking questions, and they were, everyone, sticking their flash bulbs up and around and over him and in his face.
After walking 10 feet from the door of the jail office, Oswald was shot in the stomach. Jack Ruby had appeared out of the masses, passing between a reporter and a detective, and fired a single 38 caliber bullet into Oswald, killing him. Not instantly, but it was a fatal shot.
Yeah.
Jack Ruby shouted, quote,
"You all know me. I'm Jack Ruby."
And what do you think of that, Arden?
I said this to Kyle before we started recording today. I think it is hilarious and also sussy, but we're going to talk about that in a second. But I think it is hilarious that Jack Ruby literally murders him on camera in front of a bunch of people in fucking daylight. And the thing that he says after he shoots him is, "My name is Jack Ruby." Like, that's crazy, dude. And the reason why that is sussy. Yeah.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
And the reason why that is sussy is because why that is so, it's so bizarre. And I mean, you can find this video online. Trigger warning, by the way.
Yes.
But you can find this video online. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. And it, because like, it almost looks staged. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy guy, but it almost looks staged. It's weird.
No, you're right.
Watch the video. And there is tons of debate as to like who said what exactly in the immediate aftermath of this shooting. And to be honest, we're going to skip over that because it doesn't, in my view of this story, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't change things, right?
No.
Whether or not one of the cops said, "You rat bastard," or "You rat communist," right? Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. And so
the consequence, yeah.
If you want to be one of those people that gets into this case that deeply, go ahead, do it. I think it is interesting, but I don't think it matters to the story we're trying to tell. So sorry to the JFK heads out there. We're going to skip over that portion of the discussion today.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter to what Jack Ruby did, right? Whether or not the cop replied how he did, Jack Ruby still shot Oswald and still killed him. Millions of people watched Ruby shoot Oswald at 11:20 a.m. that same day. Famous lawyer Melvin Belli took on Ruby's defense pro bono, and he failed to charge the trial's trial's venue to anywhere but Dallas, Texas. Of the 8 men and 4 female jurors, one person had seen Ruby shoot Oswald on live television. During the trial of the man who killed Lee Harvey Oswald, 20 prosecution witnesses testified. Detective James R. Lavelle, who was cuffed to Oswald during the shooting, said that Ruby exclaimed, "I hope the son of a bitch dies." Officer D.R. Archer testified that Ruby had said, "I intended to shoot him 3 times while being placed under arrest."
Wow. Okay.
Maybe in response to 3 bullets.
Maybe in response to what?
3 bullets.
3 bullets. Yeah.
Got it, JFK.
Yeah. Hey, that is pretty. That's pretty poetic, honestly.
Yeah. Melvin Belli primarily focused the defense on presenting Jack Ruby as psychologically troubled, so at least to avoid a death penalty charge.
All right.
Belli first called 19-year-old stripper Little Lynn to the stand, who said that Ruby had a very quick temper and that he would easily fly off the handle.
Well, that's not another, helpful, Little Lynn.
No. Another one of the strippers employed at Jack Ruby's club, named Penny Dollar, testified that Ruby once beat a taxi driver's head in on the sidewalk, suddenly stopped, and asked, "Did I do this?"
Whoa, like he goes Bill Ramsey, South End Werewolf type, and has like a 10-second fugue state or something.
Something like that just snaps and loses control.
Wow, okay.
To their point, Jack Ruby had been known to get into scuffles around his nightclub and behave erratically at times. He would often fire dancers just to demand why they hadn't been back to work the next day after.
Okay.
Testimony from clinical experts, of course, was the most vital aspect of Ruby's insanity defense. Associate clinical professor of psychology and psychiatry at Yale University, Dr. Roy Schaefer, introduced the notion of psychomotor epilepsy to the trial.
Okay.
Schaefer said, quote,
I determined that he did have organic brain damage. The most likely specific nature of it was psychomotor epilepsy.
basically saying,
Okay.
to vastly oversimplify it, he had a type of seizure where he lost control of his body and it is just moving on its own accord, basically. Right? It's not the seizure that we're used
Interesting.
to seeing where people are having muscle spasms and shaking. It's more just motor control loss, but your body is still moving.
Right. Interesting.
What an
Okay.
interesting set of movements for your body to just naturally do as a
You know
psychomotor
what?
epileptic seizure.
I was gonna say it, but I didn't want to stop. But I was gonna say that. Like, very interesting that your seizure would make you pull a trigger and kill someone, hitting that specific person that you knew that you wanted to kill right in the stomach. That's interesting.
Dr. Manfred S. Guttmacher, Chief Medical Officer of the Supreme Court of Baltimore, stated the following, quote,
I don't think he was capable of knowing right from wrong or to the nature and consequences of his act. I think he was trying to keep his sanity. I think he had an unusual degree of involvement in the whole tragedy. There was disruption of his ego, a very short-lived psychotic episode in which the hostile part of his makeup, which is very strong, became focused on this one individual. Homicide was the result. So on the one hand, we have a psychotic fugue state mental break. And on the other hand, we have psychomotor epilepsy, where a seizure can make you shoot someone.
Ultimately, despite all of the evidence presented, the jury deliberated for 2 hours and 19 minutes, which is
Wow.
very short.
That's fast.
For those of you who don't know, for a case this important, 2 hours and 19 minutes is like basically not even deliberating, right? Like
Yeah,
it is
he
a
definitely
jury
got
can go
the
into
speedy
deliberation in a case
trial
like
end of
this
that.
for weeks or months
Oh, yeah.
easily, and it wouldn't be second guessed, right? But they deliberated for 2 hours and 19 minutes on March 14th, 1964, before finding Jack Ruby, quote,
Guilty of murder with malice as charged in the indictment, and we assess his punishment at death.
so Jack Ruby was
Fuck.
sentenced to death for the killing of
Damn.
Oswald.
That is so crazy.
Over 2.5 years of appeals followed, which is, again, pretty standard for a death penalty conviction.
Right.
And they finally succeeded. And on October 5th of 1966, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals found that the statements Ruby made to police right after shooting Oswald should not have been admitted as evidence during the trial. Also, they found that holding a trial in Dallas was completely unfair to Jack Ruby. He would not get a fair trial in Dallas. And because of these two
Yeah.
factors, his death sentence was overturned.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about this before, particularly in our Ted Bundy episode, like when he went to trial in Colorado and they moved him to a different city that was less favorable. Fuck fuck Ted Bundy, make no mistake. But this is something that definitely factors into the Jack Ruby, where it's like 2 days earlier from this man being shot. So, of course, the people of Dallas are going to be freaking out at him. You know what I mean? Like, this is their whole fucking thing.
Exactly. And a new trial was scheduled for Ruby in February of 1967 in Wichita Falls, Texas. But Ruby became too sick to move.
Oh.
He had complained of stomach pain for a long time, but the jail doctors had not taken his complaints seriously, which is its own issue for sure.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Upon later inspection, Jack Ruby was diagnosed with cancer of the liver, brain, and lungs.
Oh my God, dude. Oh no.
And oh, on word. His deathbed, Ruby gave an interview with his attorney and his brother at Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas, Texas. Once again, the same hospital that JFK and Lee Harvey Oswald were all pronounced dead in.
It's like, it's the conspiracy writes itself, dude. Like, how do you do that? How do you do that?
Come on, dude.
Come on.
During this confession, Ruby recounted the day that he killed Oswald. And during it, he insisted that he killed Oswald in retribution for JFK's assassination. He stuck to his story until the end.
Oh my word.
And we are actually going to take a moment here and listen to, at the very least, part of this confession that was taped. So,
before Ruby was transferred from the Dallas County Jail to Parkland Hospital for treatment of a massive cancer infection, he was guarded around the clock in solitary confinement. There were no windows in his Spartan cell. A naked light bulb shone above him 24 hours a day. Thinking back 3 years, Ruby lay in his hospital bed and recounted the events regarding his killing of Lee Harvey Oswald.
Well, I went to the West Virginia to try to send the money. And naturally, Hart took my money. After he took the money, I turned away and walked out. And I walked down the street. And the curiosity had aroused me. Because of the flash in my mind, seeing the people there before I went up to West Virginia as I drove by on Main Street. On the south side of Main Street. So I walked towards the ramp. I noticed the police squad car on the head of the ramp and an officer leaning over talking to him with his back to me. All I did was walk down there, down to the bottom of the ramp, and that's when the episode happened, at the bottom of the ramp.
Did you recognize anybody when you reached the bottom of the ramp?
No, but I recognized the police officer in the car that was in the car. It was Lieutenant Sam Pierce, and this other man was just talking to him.
When did you finally realize that something had happened?
Well, it happened in such a blur that it happened. It happened in such a blur that before I knew it, I was down on the ground. The officers had me on the ground.
Had you realized you had done anything?
Well, really, it happened so fast and everything else, I can't recall what had happened from the time I came to the bottom of the ramp until the police officers had me on the ground.
You have no recollection, no.
But I know that they were holding my hand, grappling for the gun.
Did you ever know Oswald before?
Never have known him or seen him before.
Had you ever planned anything like this?
I was so emotionally upset for 3 days.
Is there any truth at all the stories that Oswald had did in your club or anything?
None whatsoever. It's just fabrication.
Normally, you carried a gun with you, didn't you, Jack?
Yes, I did. I always carried a gun because of various all occasions I had my gloves. Then I carried a pretty large sum of money at times. The ironic part of this is, had I made an illegal turn behind the bus to the parking lot, had I gone the way I was supposed to go, straight down Main Street, I would never have met this fate, because the difference in meeting this fate was 30 seconds, one way or the other.
Did you know when Oswald was going to move, Jack?
He was supposed to be moved at 10 o'clock.
Right. Well, is there anything else that you think I ought to know, Jack?
Well,
are you uncomfortable?
My rectum is I'm bedridden, you know?
Yeah, you got sores, huh?
Not that it's not sores. It's
from the
pain.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That man is fucking lying, dude. He is straight fucking cap, bro. That is not what the fuck happened. Absolutely. That man is lying. I do not buy that for a fucking second. When you were presenting all this information to me, I was kind of like, okay, like maybe. Hearing him talk about it, fuck no, dude. He meant to kill him. Fuck that. No way.
Mm-hmm. One thing, though, that I do think is really interesting that he mentions, that I think rings true for everything that we have talked about in the last few weeks and everything that we are going to talk about in the next coming couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We got a ways to go on day.
We still got a while.
Still. but the amount of chance that it took, because his timing only worked out to get Oswald in that situation because he cut off a bus and took an illegal turn. If he had followed the traffic laws and gone the way he was supposed to, he would have missed Oswald. Right?
Yeah. That is pretty crazy.
And it's the same thing as like the amount of chance that it took for Oswald to be in the Texas School Book Depository at that exact moment with his rifle, knowing that the presidential motorcade was going to be going that route at that moment. The amount of chance it took, the amount of time they had to plan these things, conspiratorially speaking, makes any really broad-ranging conspiracy with this really fucking hard to believe.
I will say, though, it's like I just said, like, it writes itself. Like, There's like crazy chances. And that was one of the interesting things from that tape, was Jack Ruby being like, I would have missed him.
Mm-hmm. But
it's kind of crazy how much chance is involved in this, Kyle. That's wild. Mm-hmm. It's almost like it was written. I don't know. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. So Jack Ruby, like we said, was riddled with cancer, and he died less than 3 years after the assassination of Oswald of a pulmonary embolism on January 3rd, 1967 at Parkland Hospital. He was buried beside his parents in the West Lawn Cemetery in Northridge, Illinois. The Warren Commission, for what you buy it for, found no evidence linking Ruby's killing of Oswald with any broader conspiracy to assassinate John F. Kennedy. The report provided a detailed biography of Ruby's life and activities to help ascertain whether he was involved in the conspiracy to assassinate Kennedy. The commission also tackled widespread rumors that Ruby and Oswald knew each other and that Oswald was seen multiple times at the Carousel Club that Ruby owned.
That would have been crazy. That would have been crazy chance.
Yeah. And it also wouldn't prove anything necessarily.
No, it
wouldn't. Right? The fact that Oswald went to a strip club that Jack Ruby happened to own does not mean that they were connected in a broader conspiracy to kill JFK. Sorry. It doesn't.
No. It doesn't.
Television footage showed that Oswald glanced briefly in Ruby's direction as he emerged to shoot him, and some people took this to indicate that he had a look of recognition, compounded a lot of the suspicion that Jack Ruby and Oswald knew each other. But maybe he was just surprised to see a dude shooting him, you know? Like,
yeah. Maybe a man was approaching him with a gun, my friends.
But beyond that, careful analysis of this footage indicates that Oswald wasn't looking at Jack Ruby. He was looking at the reporter Ike Pappas, who held his microphone out towards Oswald and had asked, "Do you have anything to say in your defense?" So he wasn't even looking at Ruby in this footage. The Warren Commission concluded that the various witnesses lacked credibility and that there was no solid evidence linking the two men together. The commission indicated that there was not a significant link between Ruby and organized crime as well, and said that he acted independently in killing Oswald.
They're like, this is not the mob. This is not the mob. This is not the mob. This is not the mob.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Oswald acted on his own. Period. End of story. Ruby acted on his own. Period. End of story.
I'm seeing a theme here, Professor Kyle. I don't know what that means, but it's a pattern and it's there. Kyle just looks at me.
I've been reading Dallas reporter Tony Zoppi, who knew Jack Ruby very well, claimed that somebody would have to be crazy to entrust Ruby with anything as important as a high-level plot to kill Kennedy, since he couldn't keep a secret for 5 minutes. He said that Jack was one of the most talkative guys that you would ever meet, and he would be the worst fellow in the world to take part of a conspiracy because he just plain talked too much. Remember, earlier in the episode, right off the bat, early in his career, before all of this went down, Jack Ruby was widely known as a name dropper. Like, he would drop a name
right
like that if it would get him a free drink. Hey, I know this dude, right? So you really think he wouldn't be yapping about a conspiracy to kill the president for the mob?
That's actually a really good point. I had not considered that, especially considering his lifestyle, too. I mean, he's a strip club owner, right? He's probably got to go out there, shake some hands, stuff like that, to be in cahoots with it, not in cahoots, excuse me, but to be connected to the mob and to the police. Like, you got to be good at talking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Zappi and several other people who were interviewed described Ruby as the sort who enjoyed being at the center of attention and trying to make new friends with people and being more of a nuisance than anything else. That annoyingly extroverted person, right?
I'm so sorry, and I hate to profile this way, but like, why does he sound like the exact type of guy who would own a strip club in Texas?
Sounds like always carrying his 38 special with him. Like, yeah, perfect, dude.
Exactly.
And have we even looked at a picture of Jack Ruby yet?
Well, I want to see it. Show me
the exact way that you expect him to look.
Wow.
Literally.
This is the guy. This fucking guy. He just literally dude, he kills Lee Harvey Oswald and he's like, "Guess I shot you."
So, again, not for the first time in this series and not for the last time in this series, many critics have not accepted the conclusions of the Warren Commission report and have proposed several other theories.
Oh, have they? Are there other theories? Crazy.
Now, Arden, we're right about 15,000 words into this endeavor here.
Right.
Are you ready to talk about some conspiracy theories?
After 15,000 words, after 15,000 words of groundwork, I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready. I think I've met everyone who's important, right? And I think that we've dictated, you know, the A to
no,
B.
No, we haven't met everybody who's important.
All right. Never mind. I take everything back. My very short and direct answer to your question is yes, I'm ready for conspiracy. I was a fool to think. A fool, I say.
We've still got the babushka lady. We've still got the umbrella man. We've still got Zapruder. We've got several people. I guess we kind of met Zapruder, but we've still got Zapruder, the Zapruder film, the guy who recorded the video.
Yeah, no, I got you. I was making a dumb sponsor joke.
Oh, well, we can make that dumb joke when they sponsor us.
Ah, fuck, you're right.
So, White House correspondent Seth Kantor was a passenger in Kennedy's motorcade.
Okay.
He testified that he had visited Parkland Hospital after Kennedy was shot and that he felt a tug on his coat as he entered the hospital at about 1:30 p.m. He turned around to see Jack Ruby, who called him by his first name and shook his hand. He said that he had become acquainted with Ruby while he was a reporter for the Dallas Times-Herald newspaper. According to Kantor, Ruby asked him if he thought that it would be a good idea for him to close his nightclubs for the next 3 nights because of the tragedy, and Kantor responded, without thinking, that doing so would probably be a good idea.
Okay, okay, okay. So Jack Ruby talks to this guy, and he closes down his strip clubs for 3 days.
Not only that, but take that in conjunction with the other FBI informant testimony that we heard, and that would mean that Jack Ruby immediately went from Dealey Plaza right to Parkland Hospital.
Right. Right. That's right. He did do that. Also, what is this dude's thing with the number 3, dude? He's like, I want to shoot him 3 times. Should I shut it down for 3 days? JFK was shot 3 times. What's this dude's deal, man?
It is something that's kind of interesting. In 1979...
Don't tell me that that's something people talk about. Please do not tell me that that's something that people talk about.
No, it's not that I've come across.
Okay, thank God. I was like, no way, I just opened another can of worms here.
I come back next week. Arden! Guess what?
Arden. Wow.
In 1979, the House Select Committee on Assassinations re-examined Cantor's testimony and stated that the Warren Commission concluded that Kantor was mistaken about his Parkland encounter with Ruby, but that the committee determined that he was probably not. Meaning that the Warren Commission said that that encounter probably didn't happen, but the HSCA said it probably did.
We're at odds with one another, my friends.
So that's going to be a common theme here.
What is going on, dude? It's already, dude, the timelines are starting to branch off. Like, we're not in reality anymore, dude. Like, we don't even know what happened.
We'll get to that.
That was for all my Loki season 2 watchers, by the way.
Kantor also reported that Ruby might have tampered with evidence while at Parkland Hospital.
Okay.
Kantor researched the Jack Ruby case for years and wrote in his book, Who Was Jack Ruby? Quote,
the mob was Ruby's quote-unquote friend. And Ruby could have well have been paying off an IOU the day he was used to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. Remember, I have been used for a purpose. The way Ruby expressed it to Chief Justice Warren in their June 7th, 1964 session, it would not have been hard for the mob to maneuver Ruby through the ranks of a few negotiable police.
So let's break that down real quick. Ruby told the judge during his trial that he had been used for a purpose.
And here's the thing as well, folks, to kind of describe a little bit more of the context here. And I don't know if you're going to get into this, Kyle, so maybe we can take this out. But like the mob at this point in history, they're not fans of JFK, which is why there's some...
No. They are not.
Particularly Attorney General Bobby Kennedy, they fucking hated that guy. They fucking hated Bobby. And so, like, that's why there's even a discussion as to why the mob would be connected to this.
Yeah, I'm not going to, like, I don't think they did it, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend like there isn't reason that people believe the mob did it.
No, right? there's enough. There's enough there that you would be like, yeah, maybe they would, you know?
Yeah. The House Select Committee on Assassinations wrote in its 1979 final report, quote,
Ruby's shooting of Oswald was not a spontaneous act, in that it involved at least some premeditation. Similarly, the committee believed it was less likely that Ruby entered the police basement without assistance, even though the assistance may have been provided with no knowledge of Ruby's intentions. The committee was troubled by the apparently unlocked doors along the stairway route and the removal of security guards from the area garage nearest the stairway shortly after the shooting. There is also evidence that the Dallas Police Department withheld relevant information from the Warren Commission concerning Ruby's entry to the scene of the Oswald transfer. Kyle, we got to break that one down hardcore.
Yeah, so the HSCA basically said that Oswald premeditated the act and that he had to have had help from inside the police department, even if those people who were helping him didn't know that Oswald or that Ruby was planning on killing Oswald, right?
And
they didn't know
important.
What he was doing. They thought maybe their buddy Ruby just wanted to see the guy who killed the president getting moved, right? They didn't think that he would be then going right. on to shoot Oswald.
Exactly. I was just going to say that in this quote, we also learned that there were unlocked doors in which Ruby was able to gain access, right? That's the help he received, right? Whether yes. or not they knew. And then they also moved security guards away from the stairway, which is also significant because that means there's no police over there at the stairway. Anybody could have walked in the stairway, right? And that's and really important to notate here as well.
Potentially.
I mean, it's like Kyle said, there were 70 to 75 police officers in this area at the time, and none of them were by the stairwell.
The HSCA suggested that Ruby might have entered the basement via a stairway accessible from an alleyway next to the Dallas Municipal Building. Lieutenant Billy Grammer, a dispatcher for the Dallas Police Department, said that he received an anonymous phone call at 3 a.m. on November the 24th from a man who told him that he knew of the plan to move Oswald from the basement and warned that unless the plans were changed, we are going to kill him. And after Oswald was shot, Grammer claimed to have recognized Jack Ruby as the caller.
Bruh. No, 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 no. Dude, they literally tipped you off. They literally told you.
Ruby's explanation for the killing of Oswald would be exposed as a fabricated legal ploy, according to the HSCA. Ruby wrote a note to attorney Joseph Tonahill saying, quote,
Joe, you should know this. My first lawyer, Tom Howard, told me to say that I shot Oswald so that Caroline and Mrs. Kennedy wouldn't have to come to Dallas to testify, okay?
His lawyer told him to say that. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't trust a word out of this guy's mouth anymore, dude. I'm so, so, so sorry. But I'm not on Jack Ruby's team in this instance. Dude, this guy is wild.
G. Robert Blakey, who was chief counsel for the HSCA from 1977 to 1979, said that the most plausible explanation for the murder of Oswald by Jack Ruby was that Ruby had stalked him on behalf of organized crime, trying to reach him on at least three occasions in 48 hours before he silenced him forever. Ruby's lawyers, led by Sam Houston Clinton, not related, appealed to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals after his 1964 conviction, the highest criminal court in Texas. Ruby's lawyers argued that he could not receive a fair trial in Dallas because of the extensive publicity surrounding the case.
Right.
In an interview with reporters in March of 1965, Ruby stated, quote,
"Everything pertaining to what's happening has never come to the surface. The world will never know the true facts of what occurred, my motive. The people who had so much to gain and had such an ulterior motive for putting me in the position that I'm in will never let the true facts come above board to the world."
Dude, fuck.
But then he's also gonna, he's saying people put him in that position, but then he's also saying that he had a psychomotor seizure that made him do it.
But then,
so which one is it?
So which one is it? Also, the people who would have allegedly put him in that position are like, he acted alone. He acted alone. He did it by himself. It was spontaneous, but it was premeditated. What? What are you talking about?
It's a really good question.
Oh, my God. Oh. I'm losing it. I'm losing it, Kyle. This is where I start to lose grip on reality, my friend.
Well, Arden, this probably won't help, because after he said that, a reporter asked, "Are these people in very high positions, Jack?" And he responded, quote,
"Yes." Interesting move.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I don't know if it's too early to say this, but this kind of makes me think that he wasn't involved in a conspiracy. Because why would the people doing the conspiracy tell him to say that he wasn't involved? That's weird.
Unless they're just playing like 8D chess, you know?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. I mean, it is a good move if they are playing 8D chess, but I've never known the fucking United States government to do anything except to just see what happens. You know what I mean? They just throw ideas at the wall.
Cantor speculated in 1978 that a man named Davis that Ruby had mentioned to Tom Howard, his first lawyer, may have been Thomas Eli Davis III, who was a CIA-connected mercenary. Dallas Deputy Sheriff Al Maddox claimed that Ruby had told him, he said, "Well, they injected me for a cold. He said it was cancer cells. That's what he told me, Ruby did. I said, 'You don't believe that bullshit.' And he said, 'I damn sure do.' One day, when I started to leave, Ruby shook hands with me, and I could feel a piece of paper in his palm. That piece of paper was a note in which Ruby claimed that he was part of a conspiracy and that his role was to silence Oswald."
Who the fuck is this guy? Who are you? What are you saying? Who are, what? What? Where's the evidence? Show me this note right now. Where's the note?
And they,
show me.
And Ruby is saying they injected him with cancer.
Dude. No shot. And then on his deathbed, he's like, "I did it to avenge my boy JFK. Look, fuck you. No. What is this? Oh my God, I'm losing it, dude. I'm so sorry. This is the part of the outline. This is the part of every conspiracy outline where every sentence is like an atomic bomb being dropped, and I have to rectify that. I have to deal with it. You know what I mean?
Well, kaboom. Oh. Because not long before Ruby died, according to an article in the London Sunday Times, he told psychiatrist Werner Tudor that the assassination was an act of overthrowing the government and that he knew who had President Kennedy killed. He added, "I am doomed. I do not want to die, but I am not insane. I was framed to kill Oswald."
Oh my God. How are you framed for killing someone that I saw you kill in broad daylight? How does that happen? What do you mean? Psychotic break? My ass, dude. What's going on? What?
Okay.
I'm just going to start rambling incoherently. I can't. This is crazy. This is, what is he doing? He cannot keep his own story straight. That's what's blowing my mind.
Yeah. He has no idea.
They injected me with cancer. I don't want to die. I know who killed Kennedy. I won't say it, not even on my deathbed. And on my deathbed, I will just say something so contradictory. What's going on?
Well, some Kennedy scholars theorize that mafia leaders Carlos Marcello and Santo Trafficante Jr., who we might have, you might remember, we mentioned earlier in the episode, and also organized labor leader Jimmy Hoffa, ordered the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. They cite in particular a 25-fold increase in the number of out-of-state telephone calls from Jack Ruby to associates of these crime bosses in the months before the assassination attempt. According to the author Vincent Bulgosi, both the Warren Commission and the HSCA determined that all of these calls were related to Ruby seeking help from the American Guild of Variety Artists in a matter concerning two of his competitors. The HSCA report stated that most of Ruby's phone calls during the late of 1963 were related to his labor troubles. In the light of the identity of some of the individuals with whom Ruby spoke, however, the possibility of other matters being discussed could not be dismissed.
I see. So we can't rule out that they didn't talk about killing JFK or killing JFK's assassin.
He was calling them ostensibly about troubles that he was having with his union, that most of his dancers were in. Many of his competitors were letting amateur dancers go on that weren't members of the guild, which is not great. So that's what he was calling about. Probably only, but maybe not. Right?
But maybe not. Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to give the game away too much. Cheer, folk. If you remember, we mentioned this during Marilyn Monroe. JFK, as big of a series as it is actually part of a mega series that we're doing on the show. And one of the names that just came up in this last paragraph is to be one of the other series that we do. So I just want you to hold on to that. All right. Because this JFK train keeps on chugging, dude. It dominoes.
Oh, yeah. Jimmy Hoffa will be making a return to the podcast. For sure.
Absolutely.
Bill Bonanno, son of New York mafia boss Joseph Bonanno, stated in Bound by Honor that he realized that certain mafia families were involved in the JFK assassination when Ruby killed Oswald. Since Bonanno was aware that Ruby was an associate of Chicago mobster Sam Giannacia. Some conspiracy theorists have suggested that Ruby has links to organized crime. The HSCA undertook a similar investigation of Ruby in 1979, 15 years after the written report, and said that he had a significant number of associations with direct and indirect contacts with underworld figures and the Dallas criminal element, but that he was not a member of any organized crime rings, only by association.
The thing that's crazy to me is that, like, every single thing that we're seeing about his connections to the mafia are so black and white. They're either like, yes, like 1,000% he was involved, or it's like, no, there's no shot, 0%.
Well, like we said, the HSCA said that Ruby had known Chicago mobster Sam Giannacia and also Joseph Campasi since 1947 and had been seen with them in public on many occasions. After an investigation of Joe Campasi, the HSCA found, quote,
"While Campasi's technical characterization in federal law enforcement records as an organized crime member has ranged from definite to suspected to negative, it is clear that he was an associate or a friend of many Dallas-based organized crime members, particularly Joseph Civello, during the time he was the head of the Dallas organization. There was no indication that Campisi had engaged in any specific organized crime-related activities."
G. Robert Blakey, who again was the chief counsel for the HSCA, called Campasi the number two mob man in Dallas. He wrote in a 1993 article for the Washington Post, "It is difficult to dispute the underworld pedigree of Jack Ruby, though the Warren Commission did it in 1964. Similarly, a PBS frontline investigation into the connections between Ruby and Dallas's organized crime figures reported, quote,
"In 1963, Sam and Joe Campisi were the leading figures in the Dallas underworld. Jack knew the Campeses and had been seen with them on many occasions. The Campeses were lieutenants of Carlos Marcello, the mafia boss who had reportedly talked of killing the president. The president who just got shot and died.
Again, it's another friend of a friend situation, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the night before Kennedy was assassinated, Jack Ruby and Ralph Paul had dinner together at the Egyptian Lounge, which was run by Joe and Sam Campisi. After Ruby was jailed for killing Oswald, Joe Campisi regularly visited him.
Bro, come on!
Howard P. Willens was the third highest official in the Department of Justice and assistant counsel to J. Lee Rankin. He helped organize the Warren Commission. Willens also outlined the commission's investigative priorities and terminated an investigation of Ruby's Cuban-related activities.
Oh, dude. Whoa.
An FBI report states that Willens' father had been Tony Accardo's next-door neighbor going back to 1958. In 1946, Tony Accardo allegedly asked Jack Ruby to go to Texas with Mafia associates Pat Mano and Romy Nappi to make sure that Dallas County Sheriff Steve Guthrie would acquiesce to the Mafia's expansion into Dallas.
Interesting.
Ruby went to see a man named Louis McWillie in Cuba 4 years before the assassination. McWillie had previously run illegal gambling establishments in Texas, and Ruby considered him one of his closest friends. McWillie was supervising gambling activities at Havana's Tropicana Club when Ruby visited him in August of 1959. Ruby told the Warren Commission that his August trip to Cuba was merely a social visit at the invitation of McWillie. But the HSCA later concluded, the HSCA later concluded that Ruby most likely was serving as a courier for gambling interests. The committee also found circumstantial but not conclusive evidence that Ruby met with Santo Traficante Jr. in Cuba sometime before 1959, the person who again smuggled guns to Cuba and plotted with the FBI to assassinate Castro.
You want to know something? You want to know something that I will say here? It's very interesting how they labeled Oswald so quickly as a communist, right? But my man, Jack Ruby, literally goes to what the United States definitely at the time would have considered one of the motherlands of communism, Cuba. And they're like, this guy, he just owns strips, you know what I mean? He's not a communist. And it also doesn't work because, like, if they're both, you know, of the same political mind, why would one of them have assassinated the other one? You know what I mean?
Arden, you ready for another bomb?
Kyle, as ready as I'll ever be, dude.
James E. Beard, who claimed to be a poker-playing friend of Jack Ruby's, told the Dallas Morning News and the FBI that Jack Ruby smuggled guns and ammunition from Galveston Bay, Texas, to Fidel Castro's guerrillas in Cuba in the late 1950s. Beard said that Ruby was in it for the money. It wouldn't matter which side, just that one would pay him the most. Beard said that the guns were stored in a two-story house near the waterfront, and that he saw Ruby and his associates load many boxes of new guns, including automatic rifles and handguns, onto a 50-foot military surplus boat. He claimed that each time the boat left with guns and ammunition, Jack Ruby was on the boat.
Again, to my point, how did this guy not get absolutely thrashed as like a socialist, communist, fucking, you know, fucking hammer and sickle lover, dude? How? That's crazy, dude. That's crazy.
Arden, it's because, conversely, some conspiracy theorists focus more on Ruby's connections to the police in regards to his murder of Oswald and dismiss his mob connections as misdirection and misinformation.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. Okay. All right. I see that. I can vibe with that.
But unfortunately, we will likely never know for sure what the impetus behind Ruby's actions was. Perhaps the man that killed Lee Harvey Oswald, the man who killed JFK, was trying to avenge John Fitzgerald Kennedy and his family. Or perhaps he was a cog in a much larger conspiracy. Who fucking knows? But it is also plausible that in all of this chaos, a mentally unstable man with multiple tumors growing inside of him, in his brain, decided to violently act out. And that, my little surplus tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists, is episode 4 of JFK, Jack Ruby.
Oh my God. First and foremost, can I just say very quickly, Kyle, phenomenal on this outline, my friend. You brought us right back into JFK the exact way that I wanted it to happen. It's so good. It's so beautiful. Thank you so much for preparing this outline, my friend.
Yeah, to peek behind the curtain a little bit, we took a little, what has it been, like 2 weeks since we've talked about JFK?
Yeah, two
now.
Weeks.
I think our brains needed it.
Yeah, for sure. My ramblings would have been even more incoherent today if we had not taken said break.
Just wait till next week, dude.
Oh, boy. And actually, while we're in the peek behind the curtain section, you guys are actually going to notice there is like a break in this series. If you guys remember, in 2021, we did an End of the World Theories episode, and that is like our New Year's Eve episode. And if I'm thinking about this correctly, that's actually going to interrupt in between this episode and the next episode. So just be prepared for that. But we are still working on JFK.
Oh, no, it is JFK. Yeah, so after so next week, we are going to be taking a break from JFK. We're going to do our what we are making traditional end of the year episode. We're going to talk about some end of the world theories. And then we're going to come back and we are going to have some conspiracy for you guys. We are done with our groundwork. I don't know if I can handle any more. So we are just going to start talking about some conspiracy theories, and I will fucking fill you in if I have to.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when it comes to, I know that we save our back-assward stances for the end of the series, right? And we'll talk about the mega stuff at the end
but
of
as
the
far
series.
As Jack, but let's go for Jack Ruby and the mob. We might still talk about it a little bit more here over the next couple of weeks. It might poke its head back in. But as it stands right now, do you think the mob killed JFK? And do you think they used Jack Ruby to help cover that up?
To very directly answer your question, as it currently stands right now, no, I don't think that the mob killed JFK. It is a very interesting connection, right? Kind of like what I was saying, like the mob hated JFK and they hated his brother even more than they hated him, right? And so there is something there, and I'm not completely ruling it out, not at this point in the series, right? But if we're going off just right now, we just finished JFK part 4. I do not think that the mob killed the president or told Jack Ruby to kill the guy who killed the president, all right? And there's a couple reasons for that. And I have mentioned this before on the show, and I don't know if I'll remain here at the end, but I think it is much more plausible, even with the information that you presented tonight, Kyle, I think it is much more plausible that the CIA is the one behind the conspiracy aspect of this, right? And that is even supported by things in this outline tonight. If there is a conspiracy, I definitely think that the CIA got Jack Ruby as opposed to the mob getting Jack Ruby, right? This guy's prominent, right? He's in the area where the CIA allegedly, quote unquote, wants to kill JFK. And so it makes sense that they would reach out to this man. Now, what I will also say in terms of my back-assward stance, something that I'm having a really hard time with, it is so, again, and again, I'm so sorry. I got to Rolodex this, all right? Because again, if you watch that clip of Jack Ruby killing Lee Harvey Oswald, right? Mm-hmm. It is such a bizarre series of events. It's very, very strange. It's very, it's not Uncanny Valley, but it's almost as disconcerting as that. Kind of like what Kyle said. It feels a little staged, yeah. I will say.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that, first and foremost. Very weird. And then, but what I was saying before about how I feel similar to Jack as I do to Lee Harvey is I cannot rule out what you said at the end there, Kyle. My man has cancer all over his body.
Specifically in his brain.
There are doctors who testified on his behalf. Specifically in his brain. Exactly. I cannot rule out a psychotic break. I can't. The same way that I can't rule it out with Lee Harvey Oswald. Whether it was a day, whether it was a minute, whether it was a couple hours, like maybe that happened. But again, to kind of bow tie this, I think it is much more plausible that the CIA got him involved than him just randomly acting alone. Like that audio clip that we listened to, I'm sorry, brother, you're full of cap. I think you're lying dead straight to my face and to that reporter's face. You are mm-hmm. so full of cap. And so like for that reason, I don't trust a word that Jack Ruby says. And so I'm kind of sticking to my guns. I think the CIA, if anybody, got him involved.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Just the, and it's the same with Oswald. The thing that is hardest for me to come to terms with this whole case, and I said it earlier in the episode, is the amount of chance that it takes for all of this to line up, right?
Yep.
And sure, maybe they had other plans in action so that if this one failed, the other one would succeed, right? Maybe,
yeah.
But it's there's so many dominoes have to line up for all of these events to happen the way that they do.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's impossible that the CIA recruited Ruby. I think it's more likely that Ruby did just snap and kill Oswald. And, you know, keep in mind, he would have been on end of life
really
at the time of that interview and that tape, right? So he for sure was on painkillers and drugs that would cloud his judgment, cloud his consciousness. And so I do take that interview with a massive grain of salt. But I don't know. But then there's so many things like him screaming, "I did it. I'm Jack Ruby." That's up with like Oswald saying, "I'm a patsy. I'm a patsy," immediately, right? Like it's so fucking weird. It's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
I don't know. I can't say one specific way with this specific aspect. But I think it is slightly more likely that Ruby was acting on his own. Personally.
Thing that you say that, I wouldn't have expected that, honestly. And I mean There are two other things that I want to say here really quick. And I feel like it's an appropriate time in the series to say these two things. First and foremost, what do we always say about conspiracy on this show? It is so weird. Like, you can't write this stuff down unless it actually happened the way that they said it's happening. And I think that's where the rubber meets the road for me here, is that, like, the things that are happening are so convoluted and so weird that, like, I have a hard time believing any of it, if I'm being honest with you. And I think that that's where we get really confused. But the second thing, the second part of this, which is infinitely more important when we talk about conspiracy, is that it is always so important to distinguish what we know and what we think we know. And we talked about this in MK Ultra. Like, this is where conspiracy gets really dangerous, right? And we don't want to go down that pathway. What we do know is that Jack Ruby, 1,000,000%, shot Lee Harvey Oswald. And everything else outside of that is, I'm sorry, my friends, it is purely speculation.
Yeah, it is. And
I am speculating.
That's going to be the story for pretty much the rest of this series, unfortunately. We are going to start getting into some murky waters here, friends. So,
yeah.
Tag along with us. I hope I can guide you through through these swampy waters better than that kid guides that horse in A Never-Ending Story. I promise I will not abandon you.
Oh my god, dude. You're coming for my boy Atreyu, dude.
Atreyu, that's what it is.
Even for my boy Atreyu, I can't believe it. Wow.
Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so very much. It means so much that you folks could be doing anything with your time, and you are here on part four of JFK from the Bastards podcast. It means the world to do series like these. It is so fun for both of us individually, so thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Yeah, I think series like these are really a big part of the reason why Arden and I love doing this podcast, is being able to do, we love doing the short little fun stories, but I love doing these deep dives where we just get to talk about something for a couple of weeks, a couple of months. And we love that you guys are just as down for those series as you are for our little single deep dives. And thank you so much for sticking around for it. Please subscribe and review if you are enjoying the show. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show, please share it with them.
Because word of mouth is the best way, the number one best way to spread that the Backassards podcast is fully back with a conspiracy after taking a 2-week break that you guys are not privy to JFK part four. And you know that the Backassards podcast is your favorite podcast.
You can listen to our previous episodes for more. I would recommend episode 68, The White River Monster.
Oh my god, The White River Monster. Yeah, I mean, this episode, although not a lollipop episode, was definitely a bit heavier. And so if you need something fun and relaxing to go listen to after us shouting conspiracies into your brains for about an hour and a half, The White River Monster, great substitute, highly recommended. That was a really fun episode. Alec was on that one too.
Yes, phenomenal job with that outline, Arden.
Oh, thanks.
You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at BackassWordKyle. Arden is at Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias, on Twitter at BackassWordsPod, Instagram, BackassWordsPod, TikTok, BackassPod, on Facebook, just search the BackassWords Podcast. And if you love our content enough that you want to support us, go ahead and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/BackassPod. We have 2 tiers. If you donate $1, you get a shout out on a main series episode. And you also get access to our Discord. So much fun. And if you donate at $5 to become a Manchurian candidate, you also get access to our weekly bonus episode, The Wednesday Phenomena. I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we will see you guys next week. Unless you decide that smuggling guns to Cuba is a good idea and you start loading a military surplus boat with brand new automatic rifles and automatic handguns to support the communist regime there. Even though we are just shoulder deep in McCarthyism, go ahead and do it so that you can stay safe. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, and when you're loading all of this heavy ammunition onto this boat that you're about to take to communist Cuba in the era of McCarthyism in the United States of America, just remember that when that boat leaves, you should probably be standing prominently on that boat to where anybody can see you and connect you to this boat so that you can stay weird, my friends.
Full on George Washington pose crossing the Delaware. Just do it.
The danger is real, my friends. I don't know if you know this, but if you're standing on a boat, other people can see you, and that's important to know.
You guys, like,
stay safe.
Stay weird.